It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from sunny downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 18 degrees. That's already above our predicted high of 17. It was 19 degrees this morning. Mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day and mostly clear skies tonight. Our low of 16 tonight. Northwest winds to 30. Should decrease to 15 to 20 after midnight tonight. Sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 23. Northwest winds to 15. But for today, we're looking at northwest winds to 40. Gusting as high as 50. Coming up on the Midday Report, COVID-19 cases are trending down in Kodiak. A Kodiak resident has produced a podcast to help people cope with generalized anxiety disorder. And the state's second largest school district may be closing two schools in the coming year due to lost enrollment. Those stories and more after this.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. is ratcheting up steps to contain COVID-19 this winter. NPR's Tamara Keith has more on President Biden's remarks at the headquarters of the National Institutes of Health today.
President Biden told Americans the nation is more prepared to fight COVID this winter than it was last year, even with the first cases of the Omicron virus detected in the U.S. and more expected in the days ahead. Biden detailed his plan.
And it doesn't include shutdowns or lockdowns, but widespread vaccinations and boosters and testing and a lot more.
Biden is encouraging anyone who got vaccinated on June 2nd or earlier to go out and get a booster shot right away. He says his administration will set up hundreds of family vaccine clinics, one-stop shops for kids and parents to get vaccinated. And he announced new requirements for international travel. Everyone will need a negative coronavirus test within a day of traveling to the U.S. Tamara Keith, NPR News, The White House.
At the event, a reporter asked Biden about the looming prospect of a government shutdown. Biden says Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell have signed on to a spending bill through mid-February.
We have everything in place to be able to make sure there is not a shutdown unless some individual, I spoke with Mitch McConnell, spoke with Schumer. There is a plan in place unless somebody decides to be totally erratic.
A group of Republican senators, including Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, and Roger Marshall, have threatened to delay the funding bill in protest over Biden's vaccination mandates. Before it gets to the evenly divided Senate, the U.S. House is slated to take up the bill today. The International Olympic Committee says it had a second video call with Chinese tennis player Peng Shuai and that it shares the concern about her safety and well-being. The announcement comes as the IOC tries to fend off criticism of its involvement in Peng's case. Here's NPR's Tom Goldman.
The IOC held a video call with Peng Shuai Wednesday, the same day the Women's Tennis Association suspended tournaments in China because of concerns about Peng. The 35-year-old winner of two Grand Slam doubles titles disappeared last month after accusing a former top government official of sexual assault. After Peng reappeared, the IOC held a first video call with her that was widely criticized as being stage-managed to take the heat off China, the IOC's partner in next year's Beijing Winter Olympics. In a statement about the second video call, the IOC says it's using quiet diplomacy with Chinese sports organizations and continues to be concerned about Peng's, quote, personal situation. Tom Goldman, NPR News.
U.S. stocks closed the day higher with the Dow up 617 points or 1.8%, ending the day at 34,639. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
COVID-19 cases are trending down in Kodiak, according to a Wednesday press release from the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center. 15 new cases were reported for last week, and all 15 cases are active. There was one active case reported hospitalized. That's compared to 18 active cases last week with no hospitalizations. That brings the borough to a grand total of 2,764 cases since the start of the pandemic, with 94 hospitalizations and 9 deaths to date. Generalized anxiety disorder has been with Kodiak resident Nathaniel Garcia a long time. He says he struggled with it for years and was finally diagnosed in 2013. But he's found a new way of addressing it, and he's produced a podcast to help others with anxiety.
A few losses in my life played a factor in me creating this platform. So I figured, you know, we shed light on frivolous things on a daily basis in our personal, you know, lives. Why not shed some of the light on something that's necessary, such as mental health awareness?
Garcia was a guest on KMXT's Talk of the Rock on Tuesday. He publishes his podcasts online by way of a Facebook page, GW_anxiety_talks, which he sees as a sort of communal space for discussing anxiety.
So the podcast is a non-judgmental platform where you can freely come to us as in me and the community as a whole, and speak in levels of detail of what it is you're going through. And we're not here to judge, because I will be giving you delivery right back of what I'm going through. And basically expressing how we deal with it on a personal note, separate. So anyone else listening can chime in and go, okay, well, he has this technique, I want to try that because I've been doing this, and vice versa to whoever else is on the cast or listening.
On the podcast, he shares a number of different techniques he's learned over the years for dealing with anxiety, and has conversations with guests who also have anxiety disorders. He currently has 2 episodes available on the Facebook page for the podcast, each about 50 minutes long. And that Facebook page again is GW_anxiety_talks. The state's largest school district, the state's second largest school district has lost enrollment over the last 10 years and will likely close 2 schools in the coming year. Fairbanks North Star Borough School District's chief school administrator, Karen Moline, gave a State of the Schools presentation on Tuesday. KUAC's Robin has this report.
Chief School Administrator Karen Moline has been sharing this presentation among parent committees and school board committees in the last month. It is data and budget focused, because that's what's driving the calculations to close school buildings. Tuesday, it was for the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. Moline complimented the district staff several times in her presentation, saying their emphasis is always on the student. She told her audience that each of them could remember an experience from their school years that shaped who they are today.
What we are doing as a learning organization impacts people for a lifetime.
She talked about the size of the district. It's on the large size for the United States, with more than 12,000 children attending 34 schools, 18 elementary, 4 middle, 4 high school, 5 charter schools, and 3 schools of choice.
By the numbers, our elementary schools have 5,677 students. Junior high and middle schools have 1,355 students. And our senior high school has 4,228 students.
Another 740 are in the best homeschool program, and 213 are in e-learning. She showed a graph with an upward trend in 4-year graduation rates that topped 80% in 2019, which was above the state average, but it dipped to 78% with the pandemic. A corresponding graph for the district's dropout rate came down to below 3% in 2020 before springing back to 4% last year. But the number of children in the district's public schools has been shrinking, and so has the state funding that comes through a per-student allocation. 10 years ago, the district had 14,260 students. This year's enrollment is 2,000 less.
When our enrollment goes down, our funding goes down.
In that decade, revenue has gone down and expenses have gone up.
Over the last 10 years, we've lost about $35 million in revenue. We've had a decrease of about 200 FTEs, and FTEs are full-time employees. And we've also had a $3 million increase for salaries over the last 10 years.
About 88% of the district's expenses are salaries and benefits. To close the gap between revenue and expenses, the district will close schools, and the Board of Education will start the process next week examining a school efficiency report.
What this is more than likely going to mean is that we will be closing some schools to build in those efficiencies.
Moline asked her audience to memorize dates starting next week when at a December 6th work session, the board will hear the efficiency report with recommendations for which schools to close. That night, the report will be published online and public comments will begin. A month later, on January 10th, the board will review the comments and data. And less than a month after that, February 1st, the board votes on the final recommendation.
And I do want to tell you what a heavy lift this is for our board. So this is big work for everyone.
The dates for the board's work sessions and how to comment on school closures are on the district's website. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
The state of Alaska is looking to hire ferries from the private sector to connect 5 Southeast Alaska villages facing long gaps in winter service. But as Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the plan envisions using public funds to charter vessels while a modern $60 million ferry remains tied to the dock.
Life in coastal villages is expensive enough, but without the state-run ferry system, it can be difficult for people to survive, says Jerry Byers, mayor of the island community of Huna, outside Juneau.
Everywhere has had a hard time during the pandemic. Now with all the prices going up, coming into winter is going to make it harder for residents to be able to live in their home communities.
That was the fear when Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration announced long gaps in ferry service this winter. At the end of the month, the Lakanti, a 47-year-old workhorse that serves southeast villages, goes into dry dock for a scheduled 2-month overhaul that'll keep it offline until at least March.
Originally, we didn't have any fill-in service planned during that time, but we have received requests from communities, and we are looking for a way to meet that demand.
Sam Dapcevich is a regional spokesman for the Department of Transportation, which runs the Marine Highway. His agency this week asked for bids from private operators to offer regular service between Juneau and the communities of Huna, Angoon, Gustavus, and Pelican. This wouldn't be the first time DOT has called up private operators to fill in. But Dapcevich says this request is designed to also include at least one vessel capable of carrying vehicles and on relatively short notice for the foreseeable future.
Like if a vessel is going to be out unexpectedly and we need to provide service, we would have a contract in place with different vendors, and we could call them up and say, hey, are you available?
Goldbelt, Juneau's urban native corporation, doesn't have any vessels capable of carrying vehicles, but CEO McHugh Pierre says the prospect of using its catamarans for supplemental service makes economic sense for running out to smaller communities that don't always need a full-size state ferry.
I'm really excited for Department of Transportation and Alaska Marine Highway Services to be able to finally make this step to allow for routine, dependable transportation that is sized appropriately for each community.
The plan to rely more on private operators is getting a cool reception from unions. Ben Goldrich is local leader of MEBA, which covers about 75 licensed marine engineers who work on the state's ferries.
I would think that these issues can be anticipated, and again, we'd like a better understanding of why the state's not using resources that they currently have tied to the dock.
One of those resources is the state's bought and paid for full-sized ferry, Taslina. The $60 million vessel was built in Ketchikan and briefly entered service in 2019, but it's been mostly idle ever since, largely due to its limited range. So why not run the Taslina? Dapcevich listed off a few reasons, the first one being...
Because we didn't plan for it and we're responding to some demand, you know, of requests coming in from communities, we are unable to crew it up quickly enough to meet the time frame for January service.
The other is that the idled vessel doesn't have all its certifications, and getting a short-term certificate, he said, could be cumbersome. Goldrich, the union boss, also says he's skeptical whether DOT will be able to find a vessel capable of carrying at least 125 passengers and cars and trucks, which is what it's asking for.
I'm not sure that a fleet of vessels that could fill in for the state, for the ferries, I'm not sure that those vessels exist or are available. Seems like the state ought to be using their newer resources in this case.
In the rural coastal villages, local leaders say they're glad the state is supplementing what had been a lean winter schedule.
You know, it's better than nothing. Is it the answer? No.
That's Byers, the Hoonah mayor again. He says the backdrop for all of this is the federal infrastructure package's promise of $1 billion for a new 5-year essential ferry service program.
My big thing is, you know, the state got all this federal money for ferries, and I think we should try to utilize it to the best advantage to help the community survive.
In related news, there's some progress in upgrading the Tasleena's sister ship, Hubbard, with crew quarters that would extend that Alaska-class ferry's range and make it more suitable as a fill-in for the half-century-old ferries that normally ply the panhandle. DOT confirmed that Vigor Alaska is a low bidder at just over $15 million to do the work early next year. The contract has not been finalized, though executives for the company that operate the Ketchikan shipyard say they are cautiously optimistic. The bids for private ferry operators are due on December 15th, with the goal to finalize the contract shortly after Christmas. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
The Lower Kuskokwim School District is preparing to take down part of the school in Napakiak this year before it falls off the eroding riverbank and into the water. But there is still no money to build a replacement school. KYUK's Greg Kim reports on what students in Napakiak are facing in the meantime.
14-year-old Madison Andrew embraced her mom to say goodbye. It was an evening in August, the day before school started. Andrew and her mom were standing on the shore in front of Napakiak's K-12 school. Students used to play there, but over time the Kuskokwim River carried the land away, and now only 60 feet remain between the school and the water. That amount of land can be swallowed in a single storm. Andrew was uncertain whether she would have a school to attend if she stayed in Napakiak. She was uncertain that she could play sports if the gym was underwater. Her mom said that's why she transferred schools to Bethel, leaving behind her friends, her family, and her community.
She's pretty much my right arm, my right leg, my left arm, my left leg.
That's Madison's mom, Jackie Gray.
She does everything to helping in the house, to being there for me, so she's like a big piece of my heart is being ripped.
The village's senior elder, Annie Nelson, said when she was young, her own elders predicted all this would happen. Translator Sam Berlin helped translate the prophecies Nelson heard from her elders as a child.
When the people begin to change in attitude and love starts to get cold, they predicted the weather will begin to change and erosion will start happening and people will start moving.
Andrew's high school classmates began the academic year in a room they'd never seen the inside of before. Principal Sally Benedict addressed them there on the first day.
Technically, you guys are called displaced children because you're out of the building and in a portable room.
They had moved because their classroom in the main school was closest to the erosion. The portable was a little safer, sitting further back from the river. More students will be in portable units soon. This spring, the Lower Kuskokwim School District plans to demolish half of the school, the half closest to the river. LKSD Superintendent Kimberly Hankins says that partial demo should buy the rest of the school building some time before the river eventually reaches that too.
For an additional at least one, hopefully 2 years. So what would remain is the gym, the library, full kitchen, and then the elementary wing of the building.
The district received the demolition funding from the state this summer, but funding to build a replacement school still hasn't arrived. The new building is estimated to cost over $40 million. The state had no money in its budget last year to build new schools. Even if it did, it's prioritizing the replacement of other unsafe or overcrowded schools over Napakiak since the village's erosion disaster hasn't arrived yet.
Why does something have to happen first in order to get some help?
That's Principal Benedict again. In the absence of state funding for a new school, she says the district is shipping in more portable units this summer. That'll be the new home for the high schoolers, the junior high students, and some of the support staff. If there are issues with demolishing just half of the school, or there are delays in shipping in the portable units, Benedict says the last resort will be to turn to remote learning again. But some students have already gone remote early, like Annie Nelson's 7-year-old great-granddaughter Evelyn Nelson. For Evelyn's family, the decision was partially due to the pandemic, but also because of Evelyn's inability to evacuate quickly if the river reached the school suddenly during a storm. She wears leg braces because of osteoporosis. Here's her mom, Amanda Black.
She wouldn't have enough time to get out of the building, and I know she will be scared.
Evelyn loves school and asks to go even on the weekends. Math and science are her favorite subjects. Speaking on the first day of school, Evelyn said she understood her mother's decision to keep her home, but that didn't make it any easier.
I'll be sad all day because I miss my teacher and my friends.
Reporting for KYUK from Napakiak, I'm Greg Kim.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Recycling of old fishing nets sets a milestone. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood brand tops all others on menus across the nation. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
Over 1 million pounds of old fishing nets from Alaska have made it to recycling markets so far, where they are remade into plastic pellets and fibers.
So in the past 4 years that we've been running Net Your Problem, we have collected more than 1 million pounds of fishing gear and sent it to be recycled so far. So that was a pretty big deal for us.
Nicole Baker-Loki is founder of Net Your Problem, a small Seattle-based company that jump-started fishing gear recycling in Alaska and facilitates its collection and transport, primarily to Europe. At Dutch Harbor, the Nets team partnered with city managers and a local native tribe to sort through piles of old nets dumped at the landfill and to do continuing outreach to boat owners. Similar partnerships have formed in other Alaska communities. At Cordova, the Copper River Watershed Project just sent off 16,000 pounds of fishing gear in a 40-foot container.
They have been baling the gill nets that they collect there, so they're compressing them down into hay bale-sized things that makes it much more efficient to ship.
Grundens, the go-to maker of foul weather gear, is using regenerated nylon fabric from Cordova's recycled fishing nets in several of its clothing lines. Roughly 8,000 pounds of old gear from Hanes also has been sent out by the Hanes Friends of Recycling Group. Kodiak trawl nets are still in the recycling mix, and Baker Loki says NACNEC is set to launch next summer.
Grundens, LFS, Seattle Marine, BBEDC, and some processors are helping to fund the NACNEC program.
The Nets team also is working to get recycle programs going at Homer and restarted at Dillingham. Meanwhile, Net Your Problem also is expanding across the nation.
Ultimately, it's our goal to be offering recycling to all of the major fishing ports in the U.S., and I think we're on our way there.
Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the second day of November, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 9:30. It will set again at 4:27. That will give us 6 hours and 57 minutes of daylight, a loss of 2 minutes and 42 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 47. That was set in 2004 and 2018. And our record low was 5 degrees set in 1988. Currently 19 degrees, back up to 19. Mostly sunny skies for the rest of the afternoon. Northwest wind to 40. Should decrease to 30 this afternoon, but could gust as high as 50. For tonight, mostly clear skies with low around 16. Northwest wind to 30, decreasing to 15 to 20 after midnight. And sunny skies for Friday with a high near 23 and northwest winds to 15. Looking at our local tides, we have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide here on the east side will be at 6:32 p.m. and be minus 1.2 feet. The following high tide will be at 12:56 a.m., just about 1 a.m., and be 7.8 feet. And our morning low tide here on the east side will be at 6:14 a.m. and be 2 feet. Over on the west side, you just had a high tide at 12:23 1 minute ago. That was 16.5 feet. So your tide is headed back out. Your next low tide will be at 7:06 p.m. and be minus 2.5 feet. The high tide for the middle of the night will be at 1:21 a.m. and be 13.8 feet. And your low tide for tomorrow morning in Larsen Bay will be at 7:03 a.m. and be 2.2 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. Gale warning today and a heavy freezing spray warning today as well. Northwest 40 today with seas to 15 feet and heavy freezing spray near the coast. For tomorrow, northwest 20, seas to 6 feet with freezing spray in the morning. For the Shelikof Strait on Kodiak's west side, gale warning through tonight and heavy freezing spray warning through Friday. Northwest 45 with gusts to 60 out of bays and passes in the Shelikof today. Seas to 12 feet with heavy freezing spray. For tomorrow, northwest 20 should become variable 10 in the afternoon. Seas to 5 feet subsiding. Heavy freezing spray in the morning in the Shelikof. The Board of Education meeting that was scheduled for Monday, December 13th, the Monday after next, has been rescheduled for Monday, December 6th, next Monday. So the Board of Education's regular meeting rescheduled for next Monday at 6:30 p.m. As part of a traditional foods initiative, Chiniak Bay Elder House is requesting wild game donations from the Kodiak community. Their honored elders are thankful for opportunities to eat wild, nourishing local fish and game. Donations can be dropped off gutted and whole or quartered at the Kodiak Island Smokehouse, and processing will be paid for by the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center. Contact Kelsey with questions at 907-481-2488. The library will be holding two holiday craft sessions on Saturdays that will each repeat, but we repeat each Saturday through December 18th. These sessions, they're going to be two per Saturday, are suitable for ages 8 and older and are limited to 11 persons per session, so signups are requested. The sessions will be held at 10:30 a.m. to make hurricane lanterns this next Saturday, and the afternoon session at 2 p.m. will be a gnome decorating activity. Call the library at 486-8686 for more information. Kiwanis tree sales are ongoing. They began last weekend, and they go on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. For Fridays, they are from 4 to 7 p.m., Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Sundays, from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. They have three varieties of trees, as well as wreaths and mantelpieces. You can also buy cedar garland by the foot. The Miniature Quilt Show and Bake Sale is happening December 11th. That is going on from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the St. James the Fisherman's Church. Enter your miniature quilts for show or sale. Quilt dimensions should be close to 30 by 30 or smaller. Prize for best in show quilters. And the entry fee is a mere $10. You can have five miniature quilts per entry fee. Show participants may donate 5% of their sale proceeds to benefit the St. James Church if they like. Contact Ellen Lester for more information at 942-3868. The Kodiak Borough Assembly will meet for a regular meeting on Thursday, December 2nd at 6:30 p.m. in the Bayside Fire Hall. This meeting is open to the public. It also will be streamed online at www.kodiakak.us and broadcast on KMXT on 100.1 FM. On the agenda are Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center improvements, Kodiak Fisheries Research Center improvements, borough building boilers, and the local government lost revenue relief program. Comments can be made during the meeting in person or by phone at 907-486-3231. They also may be emailed to clerks@kodiakak.us by noon on Thursday.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.